When I think of the Star Wars character Yoda, I think of a very wise, humble, seasoned, experienced mentor. An individual who goes out of his way to teach. Someone who genuinely desires to share his knowledge and experience. Someone very interested in giving back to the community. Yoda commits time, shows empathy, listens actively, serves as an advocate, expresses positive expectations, and builds trust. Most importantly, the only thing Yoda expects in return is for his students to embody the same values and share them with others. If Buffalo had a Yoda, it would be Tom Beecher. Tom is 82 years old, looks like he's in his 60s, and has been making Buffalo a better place for 6 decades. In fact, when Tom's receptionist sent me Tom's bio, she accidentally sent me the 7-page version instead of the condensed version. In that 7 pages, there was no fluff. There were pages of accomplishments, volunteering, and helping the people of Buffalo. Tom is currently the chairman of the board of Barentis LLC. He is also completing 57 years of law practice as counsel for Phillips Lytle LLP. He has served on many corporate boards, including Fleet National Bank, a predecessor of Bank of America. He was a founder of the venture capital company based in Buffalo, Rand Capital Corporation. Mr. Beecher's interests outside of his business activities are focused on healthcare, education, and the care and feeding of the poor. He is a founder, treasurer, and director of the Bison Children's Scholarship Fund, a foundation providing over 1,900 scholarships annually to poor families in Western New York seeking school choice to break the cycle of poverty. Currently, he is chairman emeritus of the Buffalo Niagara Medical Campus, of which he was a founder and its first chair. He also served for many years on the board of Buffalo General Hospital and was instrumental in the merger of Buffalo General Hospital into Kaleida Health. Mr. Beecher was the organizing chair of the Jacobs Institute and is now its secretary. He has been awarded many honors from schools and organizations, and he has been happily married to Judy Carr Beecher for 50 years. Our previous interviewee, Patrick Whalen, connected us with Tom Beecher, and it didn't take long for me to see why he suggested Tom. I only shared a handful of Tom's accomplishments, many of which have made a positive impact in Buffalo. However, the role he played in founding the Buffalo Niagara Medical Campus has already improved the downtown area dramatically, and it hasn't even been fully built out yet. The number of jobs already created and still planning on being created in the next 5 years are staggering. I really enjoy talking to Tom about Buffalo. So without further ado, here's Buffalo's Yoda, Thomas Beecher.
Tom, thanks again for giving me this opportunity to speak with you. I really do appreciate it. I want to start where we left off with Pat Whalen. He mentioned that the medical campus started decades ago. And when he talked about the medical campus, he talked about you and he talked about Tony Masiello and even Jimmy Griffin and all that. And he suggested that we speak with you next. And of course, here we are. So I was hoping that we could start with you telling a little history about how the medical campus came to be.
Tony, first of all, thanks for having me. I always enjoy an opportunity to talk about the Buffalo Niagara Medical Campus, and I think it's great that we can put some of the history down in a format that other people may be able to learn from in the future. So let me start just by getting a date on the table, and that's the year 2000 when the medical campus idea was really conceived and we got started. So I was 65 years of age and had just completed my tour as chairman of Kaleida Health. But I'm going to answer your question in two ways. I want to give the approximate history behind the creation of the Buffalo Niagara Medical Campus and then talk a little bit about the efforts that preceded that. But the major effort that was in the decade just before the medical campus was formed was the creation of the High Street Medical Corridor. And that was led by a very prominent Buffalo attorney by the name of Albert Mugel. He happened to have taught me in law school. He was a great professor. He was a great hero in the Second World War. He went back in Korea. He was a distinguished and outstanding guy. And he was very close to Bill Kennard, who was the president and CEO of Buffalo General Hospital. So we're going back to the Buffalo General days now in the 90s, and Al and Bill Kennard thought that there ought to be a way to gather together the medical institutions in the community to better serve the community. And they had a lot of support in the then mayor, Jimmy Griffin, who was looking at what was happening in our sister city, Cleveland, and thought we ought to have a Cleveland clinic. Well, the structure of the Cleveland clinic is vastly different than anything we had in Buffalo, and that wasn't going to happen, but it was still good to see what was going on. And Al and Bill and the mayor and a number of other mostly politicians went over and spent a couple of days seeing Cleveland, came very enthusiastic about what we might do in Buffalo, and formed this High Street Medical Corridor. It was really subsidized by Al himself, who formed the corporation, and Bill Kennard, through General, provided some a very bright young MBA to be a support person to it. So they got started and invited a lot of people to the table. All the people were independent back in those days. All the hospitals, because this was pre the merger of the Catholic system and pre the merger into Kaleida. Al told me that it turned out to be an opportunity for him to buy a lot of people breakfast, to meet a lot of politicians, and to basically get nothing done. And it fell of its own weight, which was very discouraging to both Al and Bill Kennard, and perhaps to the mayor, but it just kind of petered out. But I just want to take a minute to mention at least a couple of attempts even before that to bring some semblance of order to at least medical education or the relationship between medicine and the university. Back in the 80s, I was asked by the vice provost of the university, Bill Greiner, and the dean of the medical school, John Naughton, if I would make an effort to bring together all the institutions that were related to the university's medical school and something we called the Buffalo Academic Medical Consortium. And we did bring together all of the physicians, our representative physicians, from all of the hospitals where the university had a teaching presence, as well as the institutions and the medical school. And we had probably 60 people in the room.
Wow.
And we're buying lunch for them, and everybody was enthusiastic about the idea to get together and exchange ideas. But again, when push came to shove, nobody was making any concessions. Medicine was even more competitive, if that's possible, then than it is now. Mm-hmm. And after a couple of years, frankly, we stopped having meetings because we weren't doing anything but having meetings. A couple of years after that, the dean really felt the need to do something, because at that time, the university had no hospital. It has no hospital now. But the teaching of residents, students, fellows, was very diversified. He was using several of the Catholic hospitals, Sisters, Mercy, at least those two. He was using Children's, Millard Fillmore, and Buffalo General. And he had to get these people sort of in the same room so that they could plan. And the institutions very much wanted to have medical students because they got paid for having them there. And there was a lot of competition about which department should be in which hospital. It was somewhat of a dean's nightmare, actually. The dean attacked it with some diligence. I had not succeeded in bringing a larger group together. He really compelled that because he said, basically, you're not going to play at this table and have any residents if you don't come to these meetings. And I went to a lot of those meetings as a representative of General, and because I had a lot of interest in this area and because I was a good friend of the dean and the vice provost. He got done the nuts and bolts he had to do, but it really wasn't anything like the creation of a medical center. He knew that. He had a much smaller objective, but at least he got the people in the room together. So, and that helped me get to know a lot of the characters. So now let's go back to where we were, and we'll take Al Mugel's effort, and we'll update that to the year 2000. So Mugel's effort with High Street Medical Corridor, not having gone anyplace, the idea just sat dormant for a while. And in the meantime, the state put tremendous pressure on the hospitals in Western New York to consolidate. And that brought about the Catholic health system, as we know it today, where the Catholic hospitals didn't merge into a single institution, but they came under an umbrella institution. They've since actually merged, as I understand it, but they came under a sort of common governance. And I believe the bishop was the chairman of the board initially. It was a little different on the non-religious side. We really had three institutions, two major competitors in general medicine, Millard and General, both of those very competitive, fiercely fighting for university attention and for physicians to practice and for the patient base. And then we had Children's, which was a specialized hospital delivering care for women and children. But Millard and General were in the obstetrics business also, so that was just dog-eat-dog. It was a classic case of a dog's breakfast, I think, actually. It was a mess, really. And so something had to happen because the population base was shrinking, healthcare was turning to a less hospital-based practice and much more outpatient, and we had a lot of excess hospital beds in the community. So the state really put the squeeze on, to the point where they really compelled the executives of Children's, Millard, and General to get together and see if they couldn't come up with some plan. And they met, and then they involved their chairs and vice chairs, probably kept their board informed, as I remember I was then on the Kaleida board. It went no place, largely because the executives, while they could agree on bringing them all together, they couldn't agree on who was going to run it, because they all wanted to run it. They each had strong leadership, they each had good leadership. So that kind of petered out, but the state wasn't going away. And finally, a group of us, two from each of those institutions, got together in a room at the Buffalo Club without any of the executives and said, this has got to happen. So that brought about the merger of Kaleida. So that got Kaleida as a single institution, and as it turned out, got headquartered on High Street. And so this is the beginning we probably needed that to happen before we could have a Buffalo Niagara Medical Campus.
That's interesting.
So that aside, I ended up ended up as chairman of Kaleida. There were a couple other chairs before me, but I finished in 2000. And as I finished, I did get a call from a consulting firm asking me for my thoughts about medical campus and High Street, and I told them what I knew. And the consultants were retained by Mayor Masiello. And then the mayor called me and said, look, the consultants have delivered a report, and they think it's time to reinvigorate the High Street Medical Corridor with the institutions that are right there on High Street, and also clearly involving the university, because while they don't have a hospital, they don't even have a medical school there, they're doing a significant amount of their teaching there. So I said, Tony, we tried that before and it didn't work. And he said, well, I'd like to try it again and I'd like you to lead it. And I said, well, I don't know about that. I said, the guy before me was a lot better man than I am, and if he couldn't do it, I can't do it. Let me go talk to him. So I said, I also want to talk to the leadership of the institutions, and I want to think about it. And so I started out with Al Mugel, and I went to Al, and Al said, Tom, I think it can be done, but we can't do it the way I tried to do it. I had too many people at the table, I bought too many breakfasts, and nothing happened. And I had too many politicians, quite honestly. Said, you've got to limit the playing field to get started. If everybody gets in the act, nothing happens. So start small, and if it works, grow. So we said, I think you should limit it geographically, and I think you should make the people pay to come to the table. That'll be a hard sell. But if they don't, it isn't going to work. And if you do that and you can get them to the table, I've kept the old High Street Corporation alive, and I will turn it over to you. I filed all our tax returns all these years, he said. You paid all the minimum fees, and it's yours, and all you have to do is change the name, and you're up and running to whatever you want to call it. So I said, okay, Al, I still don't know. So I went around and saw the institutional leaders, and something the consultants had pointed out was true. They had all undergone a change since the earlier attack. Kennard was gone. And replaced by John Friedlander, who, as it turned out, ended up as the CEO of Kaleida, and I had been chairman, when I was chairman of the Buffalo General, he was the vice president, executive vice president, and he became the president of Kaleida, so I knew John well, but he was different than the guy who had tried the effort on a medical campus before. There was new leadership and very dynamic leadership at Roswell, which is really a turning point in this whole story. David Hone had come to town from the Texas Medical Center, and he knew the world outside Buffalo, and he knew the big times, and he knew the granddaddy, and had worked at the granddaddy of all medical centers, and that's the Texas Medical Center, which is just a vast enterprise. He was at MD Anderson, and he was in a high, very high level, he was a very accomplished surgeon, but he was an administrator there, and was hired to run Wiswell. So that was a breath of fresh air. University president had turned over, and actually the guy who'd been my good friend, who was the vice provost, Bill Greiner, had become the president. And Bill and I were buddies from earlier efforts together. We had houses near one another at the beach and had become good friends. He, like I, is a lawyer. So, or was a lawyer. He's unfortunately passed away now. So I had a great rapport with him. So I didn't know Hone, but I could see this guy is a powerhouse. And I had a couple of people that were new in their jobs, or relatively new in their jobs, but that I knew. And I said, well, maybe it could happen. The consultant said we also ought to involve the Buffalo Medical Group's foundation, because they were then a very significant player in the delivery of care on High Street. It was basically their only place back then. And they had, I think in those days, close to 100 physicians there, and they had all the subspecialties, and they did a great deal of admitting to the general. So Dr. Herman McGavro was asked by their board. The medical group itself wasn't a member at that time. It was their foundation, because all of the members were not-for-profits, and they had a foundation set up to do whatever. But Herman was maybe the president of it. In any case, he's a very respected dermatologist, but a man with great vision, and he was a terrific representative for them in the early days. And then Houtman Woodward Research Institute was headed up by a Nobel laureate. We thought that can't hurt us to have a Nobel laureate, Herb Houtman. But George DeTita, who was the operating head, Herb would come around, and Herb was certainly supportive. But the key guy, and he turned out to be another very key guy in the story, George DeTita, was their CEO, and George came on board, or we talked to George. As we began to think through the governance structure, we thought that what we needed was a board that represented not only the paid executives, but the unpaid volunteer leadership, because that was the only way we were going to get a community representation. All of the CEOs, I recognized very early on, their mission was not to make the Buffalo Niagara Medical Campus, wasn't even called that then, but our medical campus a success. Their mission in life was to make their institution successful. Mm. And that sometimes conflicted with the objectives of the other institutions. And I thought, we've got to be able to step back. It's a little like the formation of Collider. We had to get volunteer community leaders involved. So we had the CEO of each institution plus the lay chair of each institution suggested as the initial board members. That wasn't really feasible with the university, because the chair of the university is the head of the SUNY trustees at Albany, and we weren't going to get him involved, I didn't think, although I happen to know him and he was supportive. So we had the president of the university and the head of the medical school representing the University of Buffalo. That really worked out quite well. And that began, then that was our form of, our early form of governance, was to have unpaid lay leadership, paid CEOs, community representatives. We really had nobody from the outside community, because we thought, we've got to keep this to basically 100 acres. This is Michigan to Maine, Goodell to North Street. Then we crept across North Street as the story evolves a little bit to pick up a couple of other institutions, but not initially. We didn't have anybody north of North Street. So we said it's 100 acres, and it's an interesting reaction. It was a ho-hum for most of the community, because they didn't even understand what we were doing. Mm-hmm. Those who weren't in the 100 acres were very unhappy, and we had a lot of noise from institutions outside like ECMC and the Catholic Hospital saying, what are you doing? You're excluding us. This is you're trying to grab the market. And we said, it isn't anything about that. The medical campus never intended to be a super governance organization. Far from it. It's on the bottom. It's a support organization for the institutions in a small geographic area to help them deliver better quality care to the community. And as things evolved, some other objectives developed too. But it wasn't intended in any way to be a super governance. We were never going to be telling Kaleida what to do, or Roswell. They were going to be telling us what to do. We were going to sweep the streets for them, honestly. Keep the place safe and do the nuts and bolts that are required to have any kind of a community, you know, the basic safeguards that you need and amenities that you need. So the first thing we found is we had a clash with the name. We were going to be the Buffalo Niagara. No, we were going to be the Buffalo Medical Center. Well, it turns out the Buffalo Medical Group didn't like that. It was too close to their name. They objected. Very embarrassing, because their law firm happened to be the firm I was in. So I had to withdraw from that. But some wiser people came up with the name, because we were close to Niagara and it's a great draw. And we thought, we got to be recognized outside Buffalo, to call it the Buffalo Niagara Medical Campus. And that was agreeable to everybody. So that's what we became. And we took that corporation that Al Mugel had established and called it the Buffalo Niagara Medical Campus by simply filing a certificate in Albany to change the name. We eventually did a lot of other changes, but that was the start. Very early on, the consultants also told us that this endeavor would not be successful if we didn't invite as participants our neighbors to the east and to the west. Not in the sense that they were delivering medical care, but that we couldn't be perceived as building a wall around the 100 acres. On the contrary, we wanted to be open to our neighbors and we wanted to aid them. So we invited into the initial board representatives from both the Fruit Belt and Allentown. They had a different perspective and different need, and you know, they weren't going to be involved in spending decisions on the campus, but those spending decisions would have great impact on them, and we didn't want them hearing about that. We wanted them involved in the discussions, and we very much wanted to hear what worked for them and what didn't work for them. And that turned out to be very significant later on in the event. So I think that gets us to the starting point. That got us a board of directors. Where would you like to go from there, Tony?
Well, it's interesting that for years and possibly, I guess, decades, that the idea that Al brought up in regards to just creating this medical campus did not happen, and then it happened. And so I guess just to kind of summarize that, what changed? What were the two or three things that happened that all of a sudden everybody was in alignment?
Well, I think the biggest thing was the change of leadership, that different people came to the table unburdened by the history. Now, that isn't to say that Greiner and Friedlander didn't know the history, but they weren't involved in it, really. And so here's the mayor, different mayor, presenting an idea. I think this is a good idea. Take a look at it. But I'd have to say, perhaps the catalyst was really David Hone at Roswell, who didn't really know any of the prior history or care about it, and he wasn't interested in learning about that. He had an institution to run, but he told us just how successful the Texas Medical Center was as a support organization to all of the independent institutions on the campus. He was never afraid we were going to take over Roswell. He came from the biggest one in the country, probably the biggest one in the world, and all those institutions remained their independence, but they got tremendous aid from their fellow institutions by having a common meeting place, and they got tremendous support from the institution, from the Texas Medical Center, just as an example. Well, let me just preface it before I give you the example in a second. But he said, we're sort of struggling in the beginning, what do we do, how do we get this started? And David had a great idea and a great invitation. He said, look, why don't you come to the Texas Medical Center? I just left there, I've got great friends, I know the president of the Texas Medical Center, he's a very good friend, I can arrange to have us spend a couple of days down there and just see what it's like. So we did do that. We had our board. At some point, I really want to get a chance to talk about other people who supported us in this endeavor, but there's some significant foundation support.
Sure.
Don't let me forget that.
I won't.
But we did have representatives from the Oshai Foundation go down. Their CEO, actually, Tom Baker, who was very supportive of our efforts, went, and I think Dick Forbes, who was then chairman of their medical committee, came along, and David arranged a wonderful tour down there, a Dr. Winardi headed the Texas Medical Center up, and he had a buffalo tie. His wife had been treated at Roswell, so it was real simpatico. Boy, they rolled out the red carpet, and it's an enormous institution. It's got two medical schools and five hospitals, and they ran the nuts and bolts of their organization just off the parking revenue, because they controlled all the parking. They had $43 million a year in parking revenue that they used as the budget to run the nuts and bolts of this. It was like a mini city. I think there were four hotels or five hotels.
Wow.
Just vast. I can't even tell you anymore how many acres, but it was a real eye-opener. And Dr. Winardi had a bus, and he took us all around to all these places, and then he assembled his entire board to have lunch with us so that we could ask them questions.
Wow.
It was a real start. He obviously really admired David Hull. Well, that was a real eye-opener. And talking of eye-openers, just let me take an aside to talk about some of the advice we got. Well, first of all, most in the community didn't give us any advice. They didn't really pay any attention to us. This was just another plan or something that was going to be put together and that would maybe be written up and put on a shelf. So nobody believed anything was going to happen. Mm-hmm. But in the course of going around and seeing people, I always like to tell that there were two of the... We went around and saw Buffalo leadership of all kinds. Obviously, the mayor was in our corner, but we wanted to talk to people who didn't know much about this. So the two people who gave us the best advice were Victor Rice, who was then probably still the chairman of Verity. It might have been just after he ceased to be the chairman of Verity. And we met with Victor over breakfast. And when I say we, at this point, I had retained one of the young men from the consulting firm that did the job, Matt Anstis. And by that time, he was sort of on the campus payroll, if there was such a thing. He worked for peanuts in the beginning because that's all we had. But Victor said, you know, what you guys are doing is a worthwhile effort for Buffalo, but you're not creating anything new, guys. Just be real. This has been done all over the country, all over the world. So do what I did in my business. Go around and see the competition and steal shamelessly. And I thought it was just such great. And that's what we were doing in Texas. And they don't mind. I mean, we weren't competing with them. We weren't going to cause them any harm. And then the other person we saw was Father Vin Cook, who was the Jesuit president of Canisius College at the time. And in his own quiet way, he rebuilt that whole area around Canisius College. Mm-hmm. If you saw his real estate empire, most people don't even understand what he did. But in any case, he said that Buffalo was a tough place for change and a difficult place to get things going, and that we could start this endeavor on the medical campus, feel there's something we absolutely had to do, and quickly become discouraged because it didn't happen. He said, you can't let that happen. He said, if you run up against a brick wall, do not beat your head against it. There are so many things you can do when creating the medical campus. Just go do something else. You have 50 items on your agenda. When one doesn't work, try another one. It may not be the one you really want to do, but do it. And eventually, you'll probably get back to the one. And I thought those were just great pieces of advice, and we followed those assiduously. So just a word about those early days in the startup. When we realized that this concept perhaps was viable, we needed to get some money. So following Yale's suggestion, we established dues for the institution. And we broke them into two categories because the University, Roswell, Collider were pretty big. I mean, they were like billion-dollar businesses, the university much more than that. Houghton Woodward and the Buffalo Medical Group were relatively small businesses. So we said we had a two-tiered due structure. But in order to give the people with more money more voice, they got two votes on the board of directors. And the two smaller institutions, they got one. They could decide whether their chairman or their CEO voted. So that also gave the people who had so much more real estate and so much more at stake a little more power at the board table. We gave Allentown and the Fruit Belt each a vote, and it was whoever they wanted to elect as their representative. And we hit the mayor with voting power, and we had the president of the council, who was then Jim Pitts, was a voting member. So we had the governance structure in place. We went to Texas and got the advantage of seeing what they did, came back with a lot of ideas. We also solicited the support, or I personally, on the basis of my friendship of many years with so many community leaders, wrote them all a letter, told them what we were trying to do, and asked for their support. I probably sent 50 letters out. I got two responses, but they were good ones. One was from Reg Newman, who was the chairman of NOCO, and said, Tom, I got your back, it's a great idea, what can I do to help you? And the other one was from Jerry Jacobs, who basically said the same thing. He said, just let me know what you need, I never really needed an awful lot from them, because early on we got the support of the Oshai Foundation. They were extremely generous in giving us a sort of startup grant, a seed grant, to pay our bills, to pay Matt Anstis. We didn't pay any rent in those early days. David Holm gave us some space at the hospital at Roswell. So in the early days, we started with Matt as the only paid employee. I'm obviously a volunteer. And then we recruited a great volunteer because we needed somebody to help us. And Ann Shvada, a good friend who just sold Axe Testing Labs, was looking for some community activities. And we were talking about the medical camp. He said, maybe I can help. So he was such an industrious guy, and he's so hardworking. He showed up like we were paying him. He was there every day with the key, and he opened the office and he closed it at night, answered the phones, designed our first employee handbook. I mean, he did all the nitty gritty. He was sort of the anchor that was there. Matt was out on the campus working with various aspects of the hospital administration. I was out in the broader community trying to sell this concept and get just a bit of buy-in. I mean, we weren't asking anybody for a lot of anything at that stage other than the foundations, because we were in organizational mode. Mostly we got no reaction. I think that the one that surprised us most was when we did go to the partnership, which was, you know, the equivalent of our Chamber of Commerce, and we met with its leader, Andy Rudnick, at the Buffalo Club over drinks one day. And we told our story, and Andy looked at the two of us. We weren't part of the group of 18. I wasn't the president of the bank. I'd been a successful lawyer and done some other things around town. But, you know, we weren't at his level, in his view, or anywhere near it. So Andy looked at us and said, good luck. It'll never happen. On that note, I signed the drink tab at the Buffalo Club. We parted friends. And I can't say we got an awful lot of support in that quarter for quite a while. But, you know, it didn't. That was a perfect Father Cook case. I said, okay, that's not where we're going to go. We went back to the foundations, really. And the Wendt Foundation and the Oshai Foundation were terrific supporters. And they did something that made a very significant difference in the early days. And I think they did this together. I knew Tom Baker extremely well, and the chairman of the foundation was Erke Kjellbrunn at that time. I'd been on Erke's bank board, and we had come up through banking together and were really close friends. But Wendt and Oshai basically took the same position. If any institution on the medical campus wants a grant from us, they've got to come through the Buffalo Niagara Medical Campus. We don't want all these grants coming from every corner. We can't deal with that. One request, come through Beecher and Ensis.
Oh, that's great.
That gave us an incredible piece of leverage we didn't have.
Yes.
We were much more popular at the institution level after that. And the institutions had each been talking about building a building. Roswell needed a building for genomics and pharmacology. Hub and Woodward just needed a new home. Theirs was totally inadequate and falling apart. The university wanted to move the supercomputer downtown, which was going to be huge for everybody and for the city. So they were all applying to the foundations for money to do this, and Tom Baker really represented, well, I guess I would say the Wendt spokesman to Bob Cressy, basically said, we'll put together a single proposal. We want you to build one building and I'll go in it and come with us to us for a request. Well, the one building turned into two with a bridge, but we did come back with one proposal. And that was the first major construction project on the campus. And that was the new home for Hoffman Woodward, the new home for the supercomputer, but a lot of other very interesting university buildings too, at Virginia and Ellicott, and Roswell's Pharmacology, which really in the UB building, they're one building. They have separate tenancies, but it's one basically connected structure. So it turned out then that the legislators saw what the foundations were doing and said, gee, why don't you guys give us a single proposal too? And we said, if you get all the legislators together, we'll get all the institutions together, and we will come and make an annual or semi-annual report and request. And that turned out to be, again, a great piece of leverage for us. Mm-hmm. The institutions liked it because we got them good access. They didn't have to run around to 20 different political offices and meet with people. The politicians loved it because they didn't have to listen to 30 proposals. And basically, if anybody came with something that was anywhere near what we were doing, they said, sir, you got to go to the Buffalo Niagara Medical Campus. That was a bit of a problem for us, because then everybody wanted to join the Buffalo Niagara Medical Campus so they could get into the foundations and the government. We managed our way through that, and it worked out pretty well. And all the time, we were doing our very best to keep up our relationship with our neighbors in the Fruit Belt and Allentown. And that, at times, was a bit difficult. There's been some stress and strain with all the construction that's going on, but it's certainly better with everybody in one tent than not in the same tent.
And it certainly seems to have a life of its own now. It seems like there's definitely true direction there and just this level of growth. Did you foresee where it is today, or is this going even bigger than what you had?
That's kind of an interesting story. Because to be candid with you, we had no idea what we were doing in the beginning. We did go look at some other medical campuses, some that were much more relative to our size. We went to Louisville, which was maybe 2 or 3 years ahead of us, and there the prime leader in Louisville was the university and its medical school. And we had a couple of nice days down there. They were wonderfully hospitable to us also. And we actually got the mayor to go on that trip with us. And we got Chet Bridger, who was then the beat reporter for the news, so we began to get a little publicity with that, because he got religion and really got interested in what we were doing. And we took the board to two places, really, the whole board, as many as could go, to Texas and Louisville. But then Matt and I went to Milwaukee. We went down to Baltimore to Johns Hopkins. We were joined by another extremely strong volunteer, Tony Martino, who really became our CFO on a volunteer basis. He was terrific, still is. He's still very ex-chairman of the Finance Committee. We had a number of trips over to Harvard to the Longwood Medical Strip, which was all independent institutions like us, much bigger, more powerful institutions, but they were great too. We never had big meetings with them, but we had good solid meetings with the leadership, which was very valuable. So we continued to learn a lot from what others were doing, but to get more back to the point of what we saw, one of the early believers who came to me, and I don't think he was somebody I wrote a letter to, was the head of the Cannon Partnership, who I knew slightly. And he said, you know, you don't really know what you're doing, Tom. You have never done a medical center. And I said, you're right. I can use all the help I can get. And he said, well, I'm probably not your man, but the Cannon Partnership would like to treat you to something. I said, what's that? He said, we're willing to sponsor and pay to bring over the dean of the School of Architecture and Urban Design from Harvard.
Wow.
A guy by the name of Alex Krieger. And we'll let him spend we'll pay for him to spend a couple of days here and to give us all a report on what the prospects are. And we were very interested in the physical aspects at this time. Where is this going to go? You know, people are going to build. Are we going to be tripping on one another? Or are we going to be tripping on? Or is anybody going to want to build? Or what are the chances for maybe businesses coming here? It was pretty open at that point. So this is really early. So Alex Krieger came over and spent a couple of days. And at the end of the first day, he met with Matt and myself and a couple of the other leaders. And he had a lot of experience in this area. He also had an architectural firm called Chan Krieger. And they had done a lot of community planning around the country. Big deal guys, very bright, and delightful also. So he said, you know, the potential here is terrific. And he gave us a bit of an insight into what his report would be. And I said, well, you're going to stay tomorrow night. If I could pull together all of the leadership of the institutions, plus the foundations and the mayor, and we had a dinner at the Buffalo Club, would you give them, share these insights? And he said, absolutely, that's why I'm here. So we pulled that group together, and we had great representation, amazing on very short notice. We probably had 30 people in the room. And Alex gave his report, which was that there was huge potential here. And he wasn't looking at whether Buffalo General could get more patients or Roswell. He was looking at the potential economic impact on the community if these institutions acted together. And physically, what did they need to do to become the Buffalo Niagara Medical Campus, really? As opposed to a sign and a bunch of silos. What are the physical elements, and how much development space was available on the campus? Everybody went away talking, and Tom Baker said, we should have those guys come back and do it. This is 2 days. You know, how about an in-depth study and a plan for the medical campus? And the Oshai Foundation is willing to pick up the tab.
Wow.
So that was really big. So who's going to say no to an offer like that?
Right, right.
So Chan Krieger's firm then was engaged by the medical campus to do a 10-year plan.
Wow.
For the campus, a 10-year physical plan for the campus. We weren't telling the institutions how they get more patients, but how do you prepare this so when the individual institutions plan for new programs and more patients, the medical campus can accommodate them? Where are people going to park? Where are people going to eat? How are they going to feel safe? What's the draw that brings the institutions together? So Alex said, rightfully, you can't do this without full participation of your neighbors, and we'd like to bring in a sub-consulting firm that's going to work with the neighbors. And you've got to have public hearings. You've got to open this up and really hear what the neighbors think. You can't tell them what they think. You have to ask them what they think. So the process went on for 6 months, probably, and they came up with a written document to give us guidance, and it involved quite a bit of public works. I included the concept of a linear park on Ellicott Street, which has now been completed. It starts at Goodell and it runs to North Street. And they basically took the existing city right away, 60 feet. The street is only 30 feet. So on the east side, you have 30 feet of linear park. It's a park that runs for blocks, and it's got benches and curving sidewalks and special lighting and all sorts of things like that. At Virginia, there was a larger piece available, and they made that a little bit of a wider park. And on the west side, they just took the line from the curb to the sidewalk, but they suggested that we have common gardening all along there, and that the medical campus make sure this is maintained. And I think it took forever to get that done. We ended up hiring a special landscaping architectural firm to actually design it. They didn't do that. They just Chan Krieger came up with the idea, but we had a New York firm come in and design it. And we got a lot of support. Jack Quinn was then in Congress, followed by Higgins. Even though we're not technically in their district, they were great and helped us get some federal money. We needed to, part of the Chan Krieger approach was that Allen Street should be opened up and not end at Main Street, but it ought to actually come into the campus.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly, that's happening now. It won't be vehicular, but it will be opened up because the medical school is retaining, the new medical school is retaining the transit station, and there's going to be, you don't have to walk right through to access all of the various buildings in the campus.
Oh,
you can get in the buildings there because they're all going to be connected by bridges, or you can walk around the outside by just, there's a big archway in the new medical school that permits pedestrian access into the campus.
Wow.
So so we did the 5-year plan, or the 10-year plan rather, and it didn't envision anything like you see now. Nothing like what you see now. Great thoughts. For instance, like you'd be able to drive through Allen Street. That is going to happen, but you aren't going to be able to walk through. The linear park, we did that. They knew about the one building that was going up. They did a lot of studies on available space, and they told us, you got to go up, you can't be building any more 1- and 2-story buildings, you're going to have to go up, or you're going to use all your land up. They got us to do a parking study, you know, looking forward 10, 15 years, what the parking need's going to be, and we realized that the medical campus had to take on the responsibility to build and manage parking, and it had to be done on a coordinated basis. It was a huge struggle. The institutions had their own. They didn't run it very well. The city owned one ramp. We had to build another ramp. We're actually building the ramp. We took just toward the city's ramp down. We're building a new ramp there at Ellicott and North Street. Ellicott Garage, Egg, we call it. I would say to the basic question, did you envision what's there? No. Did we envision a lot of progress? Yes. I couldn't have imagined what we now see in my wildest dreams.
Wow,
that was probably 2005 when we finished that plan, and we really completed what they said we'd do, or hope to do in 10 years, and 5 plus, maybe 6, with the completion of the park. And we updated that plan a few years ago, and it's probably, I'm not the chairman anymore, but if I were to talk to the chairman, I'd say, you know, time to do a new plan. And it's interesting. We might do a much different kind of plan now, because one of the things that took place when we were in Texas, which just blew us away, they shared their plan with us. They had just done their next 50-year blue.
Wow, 50-5-0.
Yes, and they had one of the world's, McKinsey, the famous consulting firm, do this plan. And of course, it's amazing how they, the statistical work they did and all, but you've got a plan for the growth for 50 years, they felt.
Wow,
so
that's
here we're
incredible.
Doing our 10-year plan, and they were doing their, they were just a just completing their 50-year plan.
That's
so it's probably time for us. There's so many good things that have happened. Do I have a minute to just talk about one of the things that I think had a lot to do with the forward motion of the campus?
Sure.
There are a lot of things, but one that comes to mind is UB's 2020 plan. It had a much bigger impact on the camp, on our campus, than most people realize. The university, as I've told you, had representation on our board, and so with totally independent of the medical campus, the university's then president decided that it would be good to do a long-range plan for the university, and this is back in before the turn of the century. So he's going to do UB 2020. It was about a 3 or 4 year project, and I'm not sure when they finished it, maybe 2002 or three. But it took a look at all, it took a look at the main campus out in Amherst. It took a look at the original campus on Bailey. But the university president told me over breakfast one day and some pancakes out near his home that, I really have three campuses. I have the Buffalo Niagara Medical Campus also, and I said, that is music to my ears. Mm. So that plan included what they were going to do with the medical school. And UB 2020 made a major decision that will impact our city and downtown Buffalo for years if it's fully implemented, and I think it will be. But very few people know about it or think about it. But the main decision, I think maybe it's one of the biggest decisions in the whole UB 2020, was that all five decanal units related to healthcare would move to the Buffalo Niagara Medical Campus.
Ah, interesting.
Medicine, pharmacy, public health, dentistry, and nursing.
Mm.
Now that is, we're talking a lot of people and a lot of students.
Right.
So what's happened? The medical school will open in early 2018. That's the most important element of those five units. That's obviously the biggest and most significant. They're what, 800 students a class at the medical school. I mean, it's a big deal.
Wow.
And as many faculty members, about 800 faculty members, I believe. 800 students, not a class, 800 students, I believe. But huge faculty, huge number of students, which sort of takes us to where we were and what we saw in 2006, about the time we were really getting into the Chan Krieger plan. We had about 6,000 people coming to work every day on those 100 acres,
mm-hmm.
and about 500,000 patient visits a year between Roswell, Kalida, Buffalo Medical Group. Upland Woodward doesn't see patients, so they weren't involved in the patient flow. By the end of 2016, this year, or it's probably going to be next year now, but let's say in 2016-17, we will have 16,000 people a day coming to work on the medical campus.
Wow.
And we anticipate 2 million patient visits.
Wow. So
we're going to have a huge concentration of the delivery of high quality medical care on this campus, because not only do we have a new medical school that will be constructed, and many of the teachers in the medical school also have clinical practices, which they're going to want to have nearby. That's why Conventus was built. They're going to want to have their patients admitted to the Buffalo General so they can walk from the medical school over there and see them. So you've got those, but beyond that, even in Children's Hospital, and all the docs that'll come with that, and all the ambulatory surgery services for children will not be in the new hospital. They'll be next door in Conventus. So you're going to have this. And those buildings are not yet, but they'll all be connected by bridges. Medical school to Conventus, Conventus to Children's. The bridge is already up from Children. Conventus is already connected to the new Children's, and Children's, the bridge is already up to go to the Buffalo General. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's a bridge from there to Roswell, and then from Roswell over to the new genomics.
So in a 10-year period, it increased 10,000 people a day.
Yeah. working.
From 6 to 6,000. That's
6 to 16.
16,000. That is incredible. Yeah. That is incredible.
And the number of patient visits is very significant. You've got to accommodate all those people for parking.
Yeah.
The part that we haven't really caught up with is, where are they all going to get lunch?
Yeah, right.
No, they can go to the cafeteria. And the university made another interesting decision, Tony. They intentionally are not putting in amenities like big cafeterias and all in the medical school. Hmm. They want their students and people to go out into the neighborhood.
Oh, that's great.
It's going to be a huge boon to Allen Street.
Great.
That's why the medical school really is sort of over Allen Street. And that's going to, I don't know if the merchants on Allen, some of them are aware of it, but a lot more are going to become aware of it. But you know, while that's going on, there's so many other things going on in the medical school that we didn't envision. Who would have thought the Jacobs Institute would be on the medical
right.
Or the Center for Translational Research that's in the same building, or that you'd have this whole development in neurovascular health that would cause the building that's just north of the main general hospital, which would be the Jacobs Institute, the Translational Research, and the Kaleida Buffalo General Hospital, I guess you'd call it. It's four floors and 16 cath labs to treat vascular medicine, cardiovascular, vascular, and neurovascular. Mm. We didn't think of that.
Well, that's
although
incredible.
We're involved in putting it all together.
So we should go in business and open up a restaurant on
Allen
Street.
Absolutely. The demand's going to be driven. You know, we're already talking about how do we get a faculty club? How do we get a gym? You can't have 800 students there and tell them there's no place to work out. They expect that. It's
right.
Academic
right.
freedom.
No, that's so true.
So we have lots of things that in private, we'd love to have private enterprise do all that. We don't want to be in the gym and the restaurant
right.
business for sure.
Right. Now, you had mentioned a whole lot of people involved in this. Are there others, now that we're going to go back to that question that you wanted to make sure we had, others that you want to mention that played a role?
Well, let's see. I think we covered Bill Greiner, John Friedlander, David Holm. They were certainly absolutely critical, and we covered the ones that I was referring to, honestly, were the great advice we got from Victor Rice and Vincent Cook. Mm. Those were really strong. Obviously, Tony Masiello is a good strength. Surprisingly, we really limited the government involvement, but somebody who started out not to be very friendly turned out to be a good friend, and that was Jim Pitts, who was the president of the council. I remember being in the mayor's office and saying, well, do you know Councilman Pitts? Because he is the president of the council, and you're going to need his approval, the council's approval to do a lot of things. I said, I really don't. He said, let me get him down here. So Pitts came down, and the mayor told him who I was, and he said, well, now, Mr. Beecher, how much do you expect to be paid for this task? And I said, I'm a volunteer. I don't expect to be paid anything. I never have in any of my volunteer positions. He said, oh. So that made him a little bit worried. He said, well, you better make an appointment, come to my office, and we'll talk about this. Because he almost saw himself as the altar bearer. You know, you had to talk to the mayor, but you had to talk to me, and you got to talk to me in my place. So Matt and I went down, hat in hand, and although nobody ever came out of the office, we got to wait a half hour in his anteroom. And then we went in. His desk was on a platform. He was like a judge, and he had potted palms on each side, so he had to look up to him. It was a great experience. And he was, to put it mildly, skeptical about what we were doing and what was it going to do for the fruit belt, what was it going to do for Allentown. You know, you guys are just going to build walls and the silos, and that won't help the citizens any. So we tried to convince him. We said, well, you're on the board. You know, take a role in its governance. And he did, and he came to the meetings. And he actually became a believer, and he became very helpful. And in fact, I thought one of the greatest tributes we received, he brought his son.
That's
because
great.
He said, this is an example of what the community ought to be doing.
That's great.
So that was really neat.
Yeah.
So we ended as good friends, actually.
That's
he
fantastic.
He went on to these other things, but that was really good. Obviously, I have to say, without Tony Masiello, a couple of people, this wouldn't be here without Tony Masiello for sure. And I've got to give a lot of credit to Matt Enstis for being willing to leave the consulting job he had and take a job at a very small salary, which, you know, he's working for a guy who isn't getting paid, and I've got a hole of an office in Roswell. Where's this ever going to take me in life? It worked out pretty well for Ange Fada for his early faith in us. Ange got interesting, got distracted by none other than Andy Rudnick. We started to look at the entrepreneurial side, and that was Ange's strength. So he became very involved with the chamber, with the partnership, and looking at how do we, and it went way beyond medical campus, how do we inspire entrepreneurial activity in the community? So the partnership set up its own deal for that, and they asked Ange to come and be the CEO of that. So Ange went off as the volunteer CEO of whatever they called it at the time. Fascinating, of course, he is now our chairman, so he became, from the first volunteer, he's now our third chairman of the medical campus, wow. Which is really neat.
Yeah.
Couldn't say enough about Tom Baker and the support of the Oshaya Foundation, Erky Kilburn, who was its, Erky was the chair and Tom was the CEO, and we'd been very good friends for years, but they had a lot of faith that we really had something. When the community leadership, I can't say they were detrimental, they just ignored us. I mean, they didn't think this was going anyplace. This was going to best be another plan on a shelf. So I think there's a lot of people said, gee, you know, success has a lot of mothers. So a lot of people say, well, we were very supportive of Tom and Matt in the early days, so they couldn't have done it without us. But we couldn't have done it without some of those people, that most of those people I just mentioned.
Excellent.
I'm probably forgetting some people, which I feel badly about, but that certainly is, those are the key players as I remember them. At my age, I'm allowed to forget a few people, and I apologize.
No.
Anybody's listening to this who really wants help, let me know and I'll put them on and they can tell the story.
Excellent. We'll add them if you think of them later on as well. Now, I have seen some of the, I've been around for decades now myself. I'm 47. And you said you were born in
1935. So I've been around 8 decades.
Yes, 8 decades. And you've seen the Buffalo decline for many, many decades. And now we're starting to see a resurgence, finally. What do you suppose is the reason behind the resurgence? Obviously, I'm here because the Buffalo Niagara Medical Campus played a role. What else do you see?
Well, let me just set the stage to answer that question, to put it in perspective. So I was born in 1935. My parents chose to have me probably when we were at the peak of population in Buffalo. The census, either the 30 or the 40 census, but I don't know that they did one in 35, but there were about 580,000 people in Buffalo then. What do we have now? 240 or 230, something like that.
Okay.
So I got to watch a lot of downsizing. When you think of the impact on a community, that city that goes from 580,000 to 240,000, that's huge.
Yeah.
Now, it's true, a lot of them moved to the first ring suburbs and then the second ring suburbs, but the population hasn't changed an awful lot in all that time, even in the overall area. But in Buffalo, it really went down. So I saw this long, slow period of decline, and it was extremely painful. We had, you know, 1901, this is the City of Light. 35 years later, it was still basking in the glory of being the sister of City of Light when I came along. So I went through this long, long downturn. And I won't say I gave up hope, but I never thought I'd see in my lifetime the turnaround we've had. So I think, I really am proud to say that I think the medical campus is a very significant catalyst for that. Maybe the first one off the block, actually. And there are a lot of people who tell you other things that happened, but two come to mind that I think of that complemented what we did in a big way and gave this city the sense of renewal and rebirth. Finally getting our act together on the waterfront has just made a big difference. And they're still in their early stages compared to the medical campus. I mean, we're miles ahead of them in terms of organization and structure and size and everything. But boy, they're moving fast, and that's fine. I'd love to see them catch up and lap us. They have a lot of room for growth. They've got the whole outer harbor, still a lot of development that can be done along the water's edge. So that is turned out to be a huge attraction for the entire community. I mean, we have a major traffic jam in downtown Buffalo now on a Saturday night.
It's
really significant. But people said they were stuck an hour or more to watch a rubber duck and see a rubber duck. That's pretty good. The other one, I think, would be what Howard Zemsky has done out at Larkinville. Different scope, and you know, it's a commercial enterprise, but man, that takes guts to take a building like that in an area where who would want to go there? Well, everybody wants to go there, as it turns out. He had the faith that he could make enough of a difference to see that happen. I think that gives the city a sense of spirit that there's a can-do attitude, that things can happen. Most of the money that came into the medical campus, honestly, was government money one way or another. There's not a lot of people building private medical schools and children's hospitals. Sure, they had significant fund drives in both of those, and there's a big piece of community equity. But there's big money either in the form of debt or government subsidy in those institutions. Howard did that. I'm sure he got every tax break he could, but he really took that on himself. And the waterfront is basically government also, but I think it's going to attract a fair amount of private. Well, it has. Terry Pegula's put $200 million down there. Yeah. So that's huge. I mean, that's real faith that you can make things happen, and he's done a great job. That's terrific. That, I believe, will attract others. So I think those are the three legs of the stool that I see as the basis for the recreation, the renaissance of our city. I think, you know, there's a new leadership and pretty good leadership in government, in the private sector. Obviously, the M&T is a strong player. They stuck here. Doug Wilmer said in his speech celebrating the 160th anniversary of the bank that they're here and they're here for a long time. To have a major corporate player like that in the heart of the city is so helpful, and we could use another half dozen of them. But those are the kind of things that have helped us turn this corner.
Where do you see Buffalo in 5 to 10 years? Is this resurgence for real?
I honestly believe it is. I think the momentum doesn't shut off. Short of some natural, enormous calamity, somebody drops a bomb on us or something, I suppose. But let's assume we don't have any extraneous events like that. I think it continues to build. It may not continue at the pace, because it's harder to have, 25% growth every year, the bigger you get. But I think there's enough stuff on the drawing board. We haven't really seen the impact of what's going to happen on the medical campus. All we have now, there are a bunch of construction workers. Wait till we get all those patients and children's. Wait till people really appreciate the new addition to Roswell and what that's done in terms of patient treatment. I think that's going to attract people from way outside our community. Wait till we see the impact of a medical school, 800 professors and 800 students, what they're going to do to the demand for housing in downtown Buffalo. The landlords, the real estate people are already seeing. There's been a lot of new isn't the right word, but converted housing in the core of the city. People taking older buildings and recognizing that people want to be here, and people are going to be here because they're going to school here. Even a couple of new builds. I think Racco Termini has a new building on the drawing board for medical students, very small apartments, figuring that they're mostly in school all the time, but they want to be close.
It's exciting.
Yeah, it really is. It's very exciting, Tony. I think you could go another 50 years before you reach saturation point. And you get these articles that say young people want to come to Buffalo because there's a chance. We didn't really talk a lot about the entrepreneurial side of this. That's more Pat's. I don't know if Pat spoke about that, but Pat really got a lot of things going. Matt's very supportive of that and really, I would say, is the architect of it. Pat was the mechanic, but we saw this opportunity for entrepreneurial development on the medical campus, and it doesn't have to be there, but the incubator building that we've got going gets things started. A lot of those businesses aren't going to stay on the medical campus, which is fine. I don't think we can accommodate them, but we want to be there to help them get started.
Now, I got a copy of your bio and shared it with everybody who's listening here. You have volunteered a considerable amount. It was an incredible bio, and you obviously, from what I can read, is that this is a man who loves Buffalo and really wants to see a change. Tell me a little bit about that passion.
Well, I suppose it comes out of stubbornness. I've been here so long. You can't just sit by and not see it grow. And I've looked at this a lot of different ways and from a lot of different angles, if I could just take a personal moment, trying to figure out what role I have and why am I here? What am I doing with my life? But narrowing it a little bit to Buffalo, how could I make a difference? And before the medical campus, a few years before the medical campus, I thought maybe it was in the area of education, because we've got to break the cycle of poverty. There's so many parts to that. Certainly the medical campus is part of it, but my first attempt at breaking the cycle of poverty was to get together with a couple of good friends, Paul Bauer and Chris Jacobs, who's our county clerk and running for state senate now, to do something about school choice. And so we started a school choice program 21 or 22 years ago, the three of us. And we started with friends and family, and we had 200 kids. We were giving scholarships to go to the grammar school of their choice. We now have almost 2,000 kids in that program. And we bring a lot of money in from outside Buffalo to fund those. So I said, well, that's an important thrust. So that got me excited, and I could see the results. And there's a new study out of Stanford that shows kids who go, there's programs like this in a lot of cities in the country, but Stanford University just did a study that showed that the kids who go through programs like that have a college graduation rate far superior to people who grew up in the same economic circumstances, and even greater than the average population. Mm. So it works. So that's pretty rewarding, and you know, enthusiasm builds on success, I suppose. So I think persistence and not just giving up, like a lot of my friends moved to Florida. I never chose to do that. I enjoy being in the community and doing my part. So you know, I've done all the way from really grassroots stuff like cooking in the soup kitchen on Saturday mornings for 10 years just to get close to the people. Even now, I still do some cooking a couple of mornings a week during the school year at St. Luke's Mission of Mercy over on the east side. Because I think it's got to be hands-on, but then it's got to be, you know, big picture. It's got to be what you can do. I guess the more I do it, the more I want to do it. So I don't know how much longer I can keep it up.
That's great.
I will as long as I'm standing.
Well, you certainly look a lot younger than your age.
I think this is the reason. I really do.
That's awesome.
You know, if you stay home and drink martinis all afternoon, you don't look so good after a while.
Well, before I ask my last question, is there anything else you want to add to the conversation that we already haven't talked about?
I don't think so. There's probably things I should have said that I forgot, but that's for another day.
I'm sure we could have weekly podcast episodes with you. My last question is, who in your connections should we talk about next that played a role in this whole Buffalo resurgence that we're seeing?
Well, there aren't very many of us left, so you got to get them. And I think I would start with Tony Masiello, who really, this wouldn't have happened without Tony. I think if you wanted to go just beyond the scope of the medical campus, that Tom Baker could be a very interesting guy. He was the CEO of the Oshai Foundation, but while they were doing the medical campus, they were doing a lot of other initiatives that have made a huge difference in our community. I'd like to think that Tom would tell you this was one of the most successful investments they made, but I don't know if he would. I think, well, certainly one of them, maybe the best. So I would think he would be certainly an interesting guy. To get a younger perspective, I think I'd talk to Matt. Hmm. Instance.
So you're giving me a choice of Tony, Tom, and Matt.
Yeah, huh? Right, sure.
You know what?
Go ahead.
Probably I should start with Tony, because I'll probably have fewer people that will have that connection. And then I'm assuming that I could probably end up with somebody else who's going to get me to the other guys.
Sure. Well, I can do that if you need some help.
Oh, that's great, Tom.
Glad to.
Well, Tom, on behalf of all Buffalonians, I really do want to thank you for everything that you've done, the decades of work, again, the impressive background that you have, all the volunteering, all the things. You're right. You could have left and gone to Florida or just moved out like many people did, but you didn't. And I want to thank you for that. That really made an impact.
Thanks. I don't do it for the thanks. I do it because I love it.
Excellent.
And I love the community.
Well, Tom Beecher, thanks again. And it was a great conversation. I really enjoyed this.
Oh, so did I. Thank you for asking.
You're welcome.